Welcome to the Hardwood Hustle powered by PGC Basketball. We believe in the value of a coach. We're here to educate, empower, and encourage you to lead like never before. This week, TJ and Sam discuss how coaches show up as leaders. Consistency matters, but so does the ability to see a need and fill a need for your team. Whether it's knowing when to be demanding, supportive, empathetic, or inspirational, in this episode, we discuss the importance of understanding and growing in your role as a coach. Let's get started.
Welcome back, or welcome to the Hardwood Hustle. Sam and TJ here with you today. TJ, I'm excited to talk about this because I think this is an important one. You talk a lot at our clinics about coaches have to wear so many hats and fill so many roles. And so I'm going to start with that and then kind of branch off of it, which is, you know, a coach has to be a teacher. A coach has to be a parent figure. A coach has to be a lawyer. A coach has to be a doctor, a psychologist. Coach has to be so many things. And I think good coaches, let's rephrase that. Good coaches have to do that. Bad coaches just coach X's and O's and draw up some plays on a board. But good coaches, they're trying to reach and teach players in a way that goes really deep. And you got all these different personalities and you're trying to get them to buy into a collective mindset, collective movement. And so my thought is we want to be consistent in how we show up. But we also, our players sometimes need different things. They need us to sometimes have different personalities. Sometimes it's an intense, a passionate, a urgent coach. Sometimes it's a coach who puts their arm around you and just is a human with you. Sometimes you're calm and very subdued. And it's not like you're this multiple personality disorder, but we want to be consistent in the core of who we are, but at the same time, our players, depending on who they are, they need different things from us.
Yeah. Well, I would say this. I think that most really good coaches are rock solid at being consistent at the way they show up, but it doesn't always have to be the same. And so I'm going to give you an example. I was just reading an article about how the GM or the owner of the Seattle Seahawks gave a directive to the GM on who they hire. Cause Pete Carroll's been there and he said, listen, I just have one directive for you. We want to maintain our positive culture. So Pete Carroll showed up every day, energized, passionate, ready to go. Supposedly the building, the team, the atmosphere is just really good. And so the GM said, look, there's 1,000 coaches out there you could hire, but this is the one thing that I need to make sure you hire that we can't lose that Pete Carroll built was this building of energy and positivity and, you know, that type of stuff. So that's his baseline. That's what he was consistent at every single day. Now, on a daily basis, I'm sure there's times when he had to get mad. I'm sure there's times when he had to just be somebody to sit back and listen. I'm sure there's times when he had to be demanding. I'm sure there's all those things. And flip it to the other side, Nick Saban. You know, he'd probably go the other way. I don't think you describe his culture as like fun and jovial and, you know, all that kind of stuff, this crazy positive atmosphere. I'm not saying it was negative, but I would say that he was probably showed up pretty consistent in that every day we're going to be, you know, locked in, focused, hardworking, whatever. That was his baseline. And I do think that for young people, it is important to have a baseline of consistency of how you're going to show up. Now, same thing with Nick Saban. There were some days, even though he was highly demanding, whatever, I'm sure there's days when a player went through something, they had to cry on his shoulder, that he had to stop and listen. I'm sure there's days where he brought in humor and was okay having a good time. And so, yes, I think both are true, Sam. I think that the baseline of consistency of who you are every day is really important to players. But at the same time, each day is going to bring new challenges. Each person, each personality is going to bring new challenges. And we do have to morph a little bit to show up for those daily challenges.
And I think, and you tell me if you agree with this, and I think also good coaches recognize a team's need and fill a need. Meaning, hey, we've lost 3 games in a row. We're coming in on a Saturday mid-morning. After a tough Friday night loss, our players are a little down. And you as a coach may be a little bit more just kind of, you're a very even-keeled coach. And that's who you are. So I guess my question is, TJ, if a coach comes in who's even keel, not really high or low, and they're like, hey, my team needs me to be more energetic today, needs me to be moving around the court and pumping in a bunch of positive encouragement to them, do players receive that as fake and not authentic, so it's not going to land well? Or are they going to respond well to that because that's what they need? Like, I think that's where the real coaching often happens. What are your thoughts?
I think if it's not authentic, then they sometimes receive it as fake. You know what I mean? Like, if you can say, like, you know, my level of enthusiasm and your level of enthusiasm or the way we show it might look different. And, but if I try and replicate somebody else's enthusiasm, you know, towards the team, and they're like, that doesn't really fit who he is. That's not really, I think that becomes a problem. But I don't think it's a problem when we muster up our inner energy and bring some enthusiasm or bring some level of demand or accountability. As we're talking through this, what do I think players need the most? I think they need somebody they can depend on, somebody that's consistent, and somebody that's authentic, going to your next question there. Yeah, I think we can be different people on different days according to who we need to be and what our team needs. I just think it needs to be authentic in the way that we present it.
Yeah, and so like one example that maybe the audience would be familiar with is like a Tom Izzo, TJ. So Tom Izzo, me and you don't have a personal relationship with him, but we have coaching friends who are closer to the program. And he appears to be a guy who is pretty intense, pretty emotional. And I would imagine he's like that in practice most days. He's like that in games, whether they're playing a non-conference guarantee game in early November or they're playing in the Final Four. And you know what? I think his players are probably very used to that. And they know, hey, coach may blow up if my defensive transition effort isn't on point or isn't to my best. And I think sometimes he might put his arm around him on the bench and be just talking to his point guard about decision-making out there. And that kind of leads into the thought of it takes a while sometimes for players to get used to their coaches and who they are. Players are starting to kind of get an under, especially if you're in your first year. I'm sure you're freshman right now. Have like figured you out a little bit. And guess what? You've probably just now figuring some of them out, or maybe you're still figuring it out, right? So there's like that relationship of figuring each other out also is a part of the equation.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, speaking like a guy like Tom Izzo, this could be an overgeneralization. So take it for what it's worth. But I think a lot of times the coaches that have withstood the test of time and they've been somewhere for a certain amount of time and they've had success there for a certain amount of time, I think that they probably definitely have the ability to morph and to be able to like adapt and to be able to get people to different levels and to call out the best in people. You know, one of the things that I think is that I see happen a lot these days is there's somebody can come in and be highly demanding and really like over the top, whatever. And they might have success for a short period of time, but then they end up kind of rubbing people the wrong way and then they're out of there. Or somebody comes in with tons of energy and they're passionate and really excited and they get everybody hyped up, da, 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 but there may be not as much substance behind it. They might not really actually be that solid of a coach or teacher or whatever. They're just an energy bringer, you know? And there's nothing wrong with that because there's people are gonna have strength in different places. But the ones that usually stick around, that have a high level of success, that can maintain it for a long period of time, have the ability to be all of those things. Like you said, Sam, they might, you know, like I don't consider myself like this high energy guy that's always da, 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 but I also know like how to be positive. I know how to call out the best in people. Like I know how to, when somebody's down, to try and infect them with some energy. And there's other people that are the opposite of that. They are really good at the energy. It's always up, but they also know how to calm it down and come down to a place of like, okay, this is more of a serious moment. So I do think that the morphing ability is really important.
Yeah, morphing or also like chameleon in a lot of ways. So here's another thought along with the conversation. what makes a great assistant coach may not translate to being a great head coach. Meaning the great assistant who connects really well, who loves on players well, who encourages them well, that can and has worked well as a head coach. Where that might come into problem or be some tension is if that assistant coach who loves on them well, encourages them well, does that sort of thing, slides over to the next seat and is now the head coach. But it worked well, TJ, because the head coach was really driving it or had high accountability. Maybe the assistant hasn't had to do that. And so that's where like a younger coach has to evolve and adapt as they mature and they have to learn how to do it. It's why an assistant coach who sees one head coach do it one way and then they try to do it like that head coach and they fail miserably. You know why? Because they're trying to be that guy or that girl when they got to be themselves, but adapt and evolve. Now that's a very nuanced and complex kind of statement I'm saying there, but speak into that maybe.
Well, gosh, I might get off topic here because this actually is, you know, we have several assistant coaches and student assistants, and we continue to grow year over year with the number of people that come to work with us and try and mentor young coaches. So our staff is really big and it continues to grow. And so this is an important like conversation and topic that we go through a lot. And, you know, we live in a society where it's always like, you've got to move up. You got to go on. You got to take the next best job. You got to go, you know what I mean? Like I've taken that heat a lot of times. Why do you stay at Emmanuel? You know, I think Graham has taken that a lot. Like, you've had success. Why don't you go take a head job? Like we hear that all the time from people. And I'm sure everybody else in a lot of jobs hear the same things. And, you know, that's, I think the society tells us that's what we got to do. You got to move up. You got to move on. You got to go get a bigger paycheck. You got to get, and I really do think, and I've held this dear to me for a long time that like what Don Meyer told me a long time, the key to life is being thankful for your lot. And are you thankful for where you're at? Doesn't mean you can't move on. Doesn't mean you can't move up, but are you thankful for where you're at? And I think that's the first thing you got to do, you know, as a coach is, and going back to like just leading people and morphing, if you're not thankful to be there and appreciative, your team's going to feel that. You know, you don't like the school, you don't like the administration, you don't like, they're going to feel that. So I think that's important. And talking about a coach moving from one spot to the next, you know, moving from assistant to head or head, like all of our giftings are different. And, you know, some people have the gifting to be the CFO, but not the CEO. You know what I mean? The finance part is where they're at, but they're not the leadership part or vice versa. Some people have the ability to be a phenomenal teacher because they know how to reach kids. So I think about my wife, like she's a teacher by trade and like she has a middle school personality of humor. Like she was uniquely made to work with middle school kids, you know, like that's not my sense of humor. Like it's not what I do best. But she's amazingly gifted to be able to do that. And I think when you look around as coaches, we all think we have to fit into one box and we got to go from this job to that job to this to that. Like, but how do you know like what you're doing or the job that you have or it's not like your special gifting? And I say that a lot with, you know, me and Graham particularly is I'm kind of wired to be a head coach, whether I like it or not. Right. And I think Graham would be great as a head coach. But at the same time, he's uniquely gifted in how giving he is of his time. Like he likes to not have to deal with a lot of the mess so he can love on people. That's his, like he has a gift to do that. And sometimes I worry, you know, if he had to handle some of the stuff that I have to handle, would that take away from his gift of being able to do that? Now, look, could he morph into the stuff you have to do? Yes. Could I go be an assistant and morph into that? Yes. Doesn't mean it's necessarily how you're wired. And I think people can and will. And I know Graham could, and I know that I could if the positions flipped. But sometimes we're just not appreciative enough of like our gifts and the way that we use them and that we can use them. So I think everybody has the ability to be it. The one thing I would caution people against is this is, and you've seen this, Sam, before. When people say, well, I'm a chameleon and I can do anything and everything, you say, but it's not authentic. That's dangerous. You know, like, oh yeah, I can, you know, I can pretend like I get an example, like a player's going through something hard. And I had this happen to me in college when I was a freshman. A player's going through something really hard, and the coach will say what they need to say to act like they care and pretend because they got to morph a little bit. But really, they just want to get your mind right for practice. That's not genuine care, you know? And you know, sure, they could chameleon there for a second, but it wasn't authentic. And for some people, they can do that. And some people, it's not a thing. So I think authentic chameleons are really special coaches. You know, I think faking it a lot of times can often backfire on you.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, they want to be a coach who cares. So they'll, hey, how you doing? Hey, what? They're checking the box, but as they're asking the question, they're like looking straight. They're not thinking. They're not listening at all. They're just thinking about that opening drill they're going to run, and they're going to yell at the kid who isn't doing it right. So I think that is a good point. And back to your assistant versus head coach, a more well-known one that some coaches listen will know what I'm talking about, some won't, but Bill Guthridge was a longtime assistant for Dean Smith. And when Dean Smith retired, Bill Guthridge, I think, took over for 3, maybe 4 years, maybe went to a couple Final Fours. I had a great little run at that. But Bill Guthridge, you know, was a guy that loved being an assistant coach. That was where he thrived, even though he had great success in the passing of the torch. That wasn't who he wanted to be. And so I think that is a good point.
And we've had some guys on here that have been like, I mean, like game changers, like most well-respected, probably impacted so many lives and so many programs, like Dean Lockwood, yeah. Bob Starkey, you know, those guys have been like, I mean, I have no doubt either one of them could be a head coach and be great at it, but they've also maximized their gifts and sometimes in many cases had more impact than head coaches have had because of their genuine care and connection with people and wanting to see them succeed.
They've been empowered to do things like a head coach too, right? Like they'll be hey, you're in charge of the defense. Hey, you're in charge of the post. Hey, you're in charge of all scout. Like those guys take on head coach responsibilities, just not all of it. What do you think's been one of your biggest challenges, whether it was your first 5 years, maybe it was your 10 to 15 year mark as a head coach, TJ, where you were like, man, I've got to become more of this because it is such a weakness that while we do want to hire our weaknesses, or Graham fills your weaknesses well and you fill his well, y'all collaborate and you're like a jigsaw puzzle. You and Graham work really well, but where in your coaching career where you're like, I'm really not good at this. And if I don't get better, like there's a ceiling, there's a lower ceiling on the teams I coach. Has that taken place for you?
Yeah, I think it's taken place a lot of times. I mean, I think early in my career, you know, when we were coaching together, I think there was like a moment or time where it's like, I probably needed to mature a little bit. Like I was wanting to like gain favor with the players, but probably in a way that was like too much buddy, buddy, like in some of the things that I might've said, or done, you know, cause I was wanting to relate to them. But, you know, I think that's one. I think there's, you know, I think a big one for me that you alluded to earlier is like, I really want to be a transformational coach. Like my dad was so good at that. And if I look at my natural hard wiring, like I do think I have a lot of that in me, but I'm also like, I got some juice. Like I'm driven to get something done. Like I'm really like wanting to push things forward. And so, like you talked about that coach that could pretend like they don't care or whatever. Like my wife's accused me oftentimes of being socially awkward. And like in my heart, I care. And I know that I really want to be that. I'm not always the most talented at like being like a great, like, okay, how do I open myself up and get you to open yourself up? So I knew I had to improve on that because I wanted to be a transformational coach. And so it was in my heart, but I didn't necessarily have all the skills to do that very well, to be transformational. And I needed to work on that, you know, a lot. I mean, I think you're always trying to evolve. And I think those are some of the bigger evolutions, some of the bigger times I realized I needed to change. Like I need to have the skills necessary to do this or the skills necessary to do that. you know, if I couldn't balance it with somebody that could help me, you know, in those areas, then yeah. But I think we all want to be as proficient as we can in as many things as we can.
Yeah. And two thoughts with that. So one is what you said just then and what you said earlier, which is we sometimes, you know, this has happened to me or with me in PGC and PGC coaching is like, there's a need that is needed within our business, our organization. I'm like, oh, I can do that. I'll jump in. I have a helpful heart, but the reality is I'm going to suck at that thing and I don't need to do it, but I think I can. My heart's in the right place. So sometimes we think we can become something. Reality, we're not hardwired that way. And a few years back, I think you've done this too. I did an Enneagram. We did this in our small group. And I think I'm a 3 on an Enneagram. And part of that is like a chameleon. And there's some strengths to that. There's some weaknesses to it. But me as a coach, TJ, and you give me feedback on this once I say it, like I do want to be multiple things to multiple players I coach. I want my players to look at me as somebody who cares deeply about them as a person. I want my players to look at me and say, man, he makes me better as a basketball player. I want them to look at me and know that I'm about it, that I'm intense, I'm passionate, I got juice, I got energy, I love it. I also want them to know that they could sit in my living room and we could talk about nothing to do with basketball. Like I want all those things and I want to try to live it out. And in some ways I do. Some ways, some players might say I do. Some players say, no, you don't actually. I don't know. Maybe we need to bring them on here and ask them. But is that, what am I saying here? Is that a fair thing?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's different. Like it's hard. I mean, you know, like I don't think coaches, well, I mean, we've said this before, coaches oftentimes do have favorites and their favorites are the ones that do the things that are best for the team, you know, like, you know, when I stop and think about this, like I really want every player to know I love and care for them. But if I'm being really honest, like some of my better players that have been here for longer, they know it more than other players on our team. That's not really what I desire either. But sometimes there's more interaction, more up and downs, more different, you know, different things that go through. But I would be hopeful that number 12 on the bench, you know, knows that I feel that same way. And, you know, or even a freshman, but usually it takes time. And I think managing those things is difficult. I think when I stop and think about that, when players go and they graduate after 4 years, I'm thinking, is really over? Like then you see them again 5 years later at a wedding. Like, and I almost with every player that leaves, like think, I wish I'd have spent more time. I wish I'd have done more. I wish I would have. And most of the time I get great feedback from those players, but there's many times I feel like I was not enough. You know, I didn't do enough. Like I didn't live those things out. And I second guess myself, but I also think that may be a healthy thing. And Sam, going back to what you said, you know, those things that you desire, those things that you're good at, not good at, like, I think that we talked about this in our leadership clinic, but really, self-awareness and humility is when I think coaches really thrive because they recognize the things they're doing well and not doing well. The coaches that I see stumble the most lack self-awareness or humility to be able to really gauge what's working, what's not working. That's been the biggest gap, in my opinion, in watching strong leaders versus weak leaders.
What you're saying, sorry, humility. And what was the other one?
Self-awareness.
Self-awareness. Yeah.
Yeah.
And those go hand in hand, I think. So, we're going to be wrapping up here in the next couple of minutes. Speak to the listener, TJ, about this statement that just kind of one, two sentence backups of like, you're a doctor, you're a lawyer, you're a psychologist. Some of it's self-explanatory. I think we know what a teacher is, but like when you say a coach has to be a lawyer or a salesman or a doctor, psychologist, yeah. You know, maybe just unpack some of that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a huge thing to unpack, Sam, but I think it's big. And I think you're seeing it actually having a huge effect on coaching right now. I mean, as you're watching like Nick Saban walk away and what the reasons may or may not be, you saw Jay Wright get out of the game, you know, Coach K's recently retired. Like you, and let's be real honest. I think there's a lot more coming down the chute just based on what we're hearing from people in coaching, not just in college or pro, but I think even in high school, you're hearing more people being okay with walking away from coaching. And when I think about like, why is that? I think it is a lot to do with what we're talking about right now. You know, I mean, you know, Nick Saban probably loved to coach football. Well, then he's got to be the salesman and recruit him. And now he's got to be the finance manager and talk about this NIL money, where it goes and how much they're going to pay each player. And then you go, and the jobs just continue to add up. And that's his job. And he's well compensated for his job. And you go down to like the high school level, college level, middle school level. Well, all of those people are less and less compensated for what they do, but the demands don't seem to be shrinking. And that's a problem. You know, they're expected to navigate parent problems and issues and to be able to, you know, negotiate, you know, the lawyer, you know, with players to get them to want what's best for the team, even though society's telling them, well, you should transfer, you should do this, you should do that. So you got to be there. And then, you know, the amount of problems, mental health problems, issues, things. Now we are called upon probably more than ever to be a psychiatrist and to be there to help these people through things. And, you know, I could go, the list goes on and on, but, and the problems are a lot no matter where you're coaching, and their problems are just a little bit different based on age, sex, you know, location, like, but there's problems and they vary, but we're all having to do a lot more for a lot less. And I think that's where coaches are struggling. And we've said this before, you know, it's not fair. You haven't been trained to be a doctor or a lawyer or a psychiatrist or whatever. You haven't been trained to do all those things. But as a basketball coach, you're asked to do all those things. And, you know, I think it goes back to the old Billy Graham, most coaches affect more people in 1 year than most people do in a lifetime. Why is that? It's because we have such big influence over them and we have the opportunity to make such a big impact. But there's a great responsibility with a heavy load there. And nowadays, like I said, there's so many angles in which we have to lead young people that is very demanding on our mind, our heart, our time. But I also still believe this, Sam, it's very worth it. You know, it's very worth it because I think it's more needed than ever.
Yeah, well said. And I think too is, so what does all that mean? That means if you're a coach listening, it's important to develop the skill set. Yes, you need to be knowledgeable of the offense, the defense you're running. You're trying to win some games because, by the way, you can't be a transformational coach if you get fired, if you don't have a job. So you need to win so you can continue to be a transformational coach and positively impact young people or the people that you're leading. And so you got to be knowledgeable of your content, your subject matter, what you're teaching. But you also, it's the soft skills that often are the separator, yet the soft skills are the least talked about when you go to clinics, right? It's how to attack a zone, how to run a better side out, how to do this press better, when oftentimes it's the soft skills that get your players to believe in themselves, to believe in the system that you're running, to be buy into the role that they've been given, to buy into the team chemistry, the importance of that, and your ability as a coach or a leader with those soft skills is so critical, which I think we're trying to articulate in this particular show today. TJ, I'll let you close it. I just say like some closing thoughts. What I just said along with this, be authentic, be consistent, be humble and be caring. Like, you know, if you're going to be a chameleon, which I want to be, and I think I am at times, but I got to be authentic and I got to be consistent. And then I need to be humble enough to know I don't have the answers and I need to get better, and then be caring. And that may be the most important. I got to care about the players or the people that I lead.
Yeah. And it's okay to say, I'm sorry. It's okay to say, I don't know. It's okay to say somebody on your staff or team does it better than you. You know, I think, you know, oftentimes the people that are called upon to be leaders have a healthy ego, but when that ego goes the other way, like a lot of times we don't have the wherewithal to say, you know, I need help here. Like somebody else can do this, or I messed up or whatever, just causes more and more problems, for leaders. And so I think that, you know, that goes back to that humility piece of recognizing those people that are around you. But yeah, hey coaches, if you want to be successful. Like, and that's really why we started back when we started Key 5 and moved to PGC coaching, right? I mean, it's really why we did it, is because we understand you got to be good at X's and O's. Like, you want to be able to do that. Like, you want to be able to coach the game. So systems and strategies, you know, we also know it's really important. You got to be able to develop players, like, you know, their mental, their physical. Like, we also know that it's important that you develop good leaders and that you become a great teacher and that you build a strong culture. Like, all of those things matter. And that's a pretty big, hefty thing to put on a coach's shoulder. But you and I have been doing this long enough, and so have the coaches that have listened. You know, take a coach that can't coach, can't develop players, can't put them right system strategies, you're in trouble. But on the flip side of that, put a coach in there that's got a horrible culture, you're in trouble. You know, and that's why what we do is really difficult, because we're asked to be good at so many different things. So, hey, Sam, thanks for teeing that one up. Thought it was a really interesting topic. Coaches, love to hear your thoughts, what you think about it. Hit us up at Hardwood_Hustle. He is Sam. I am TJ. We are the Hardwood Hustle.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the Hardwood Hustle, where we believe in the value of a coach. We also want to make sure you know about our coaching resources and freebies available to you at pgchustle.com. We have a workshop, a Read and React masterclass, and effective practice planning tips to help you enhance your coaching. Get started at pgchustle.com. From the Hardwood Hustle team, thanks again. We can't wait to be with you again next week.